te vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. So we're starting chapter 79 of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Lord Balaram goes on pilgrimage. So we'll read the introduction, and then we're going to do the first five verses. We'll chant together five. I think the students can only stay at 8:30, so we'll try to move through reasonably quickly. This chapter describes how Lord Baladev satisfied the Brahmins by killing Balvala, bathed at various holy pilgrimage sites, and attempted to dissuade Bhimasen and Duryodhana from fighting. At the sacrificial arena of the sages at Naimisharanya Forest, a harsh wind began to blow on the new moon day, spreading the obnoxious smell of pus and obscuring everything with dust. The demon Balvala then appeared there with a trident in his hand, his massive body pitch black, and his face very frightening. Lord Baladev caught the demon with his plow and then struck him a ferocious blow on the head with his club, killing him. The sages chanted Lord Baladev's glories and presented him with lavish gifts. Lord Balaram then began his pilgrimage, during which he visited many holy tirthas. When he heard news of the battle between the Kurus and the Pandavas, the Lord went to Kurukshetra to try to stop the duel between Bhima and Duryodhana. But he could not dissuade them from fighting, so deep was their enmity. Understanding that the fight was the arrangement of fate, Lord Baladev left the battlefield and returned to Dwarka. Sometime later, Balaram again went to the Naimisharanya forest, where the sages performed a number of fire sacrifices on his behalf. Lord Baladev reciprocated by granting the sages transcendental knowledge and revealing them his eternal identity. I think Balaram exhibits his universal form. And interesting. Usually we think of only Krishna doing that. Okay, I'll just read through the first few verses. Text 1, Shukadeva Goswami said, "Then on the new moon day, O king, a fierce and frightening wind arose, scattering dust all about and spreading the smell of pus everywhere." 2, next, on the sacrificial arena came a downpour of abominable things sent by Balvala, after which the demon himself appeared, trident in hand. Text 3 and 4. The immense demon resembled a massive black carbon. His topknot and beard were like molten copper, and his face had horrible fangs and furrowed eyebrows. Upon seeing him, Lord Balaram thought of his club, which tears to pieces his enemy's armies, and his plow weapon, which punishes the demons. Thus summoned, the two weapons appeared before him at once. And text 5. We'll chant Sanskrit responsively. Tamakrishya halagrena bhavalam gaganecharam mushalena hanat krudho murdni brahma druhambala tamakrishya halagrena bhavalam gaganecharam mushalena hanat krudho murdni brahma druhambala. Other chant. Vaishnavis? Gaganecharam Vishalena Hanatudho Udni Brahma Juham. Students? Thank you. It was very nice. You know, Srila Prabhupada really emphasized that the students in a Gurukula should learn Sanskrit. How many of you are taking Sanskrit now? Oh, a lot of. Great. It's one of mostly the older classes? Yeah. Very good. It's very important, actually. I don't know Sanskrit very well. I always wish I did. So I'm envious of you that you're getting this wonderful opportunity. Okay, let's do the word for word. Tam. Him. Akrishya, pulling toward him. Hala, of his plow. Agrena, with the front end. Balvalam, Balvala. Gagane, in the sky. Charam, who was moving. Mushalena, with his club. Ahanat, struck. Krudha, angry. Murdni, on the head. Brahma, of the Brahmins. Druham, the harasser. Who's it? Harasser. Harasser. Okay. Bala, Lord Balaram. Translation by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. With the tip of his plow, Lord Balaram caught hold of the demon Balvala as he flew through the sky. And with his club, the Lord angrily struck that harasser of Brahmins on his head. Om Agyanatiparandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chakshavini Kamina Kesmashivare Namaha Vanchakalpatyuvishya Kripasindhu Vyevacha Patitano Pavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha. There's no purport. There's not very many purports in this chapter. So let's just review quickly what has gone on in the last few verses, or probably since last Tuesday. Balaram is going on pilgrimage. Now, what is going on right now as Balaram is hanging out with the sages? What else is going on of great momentous importance in the rest of the world? Yeah. The battle of Kukshetra. Why is Balaram, we see how powerful he is. He's able to kill demons easily. He killed Romaharshansuta with what? A blade of grass, he just touched it. So Balaram, of course, is, we know, is all-powerful. Why is he not in the battle of Kurukshetra? Very good. Did you all hear that? Because he was the teacher, he taught the use of the club, fighting with the club, to both Duryodhana and Bhima, and they were fighting each other on opposite sides, the Pandavas and the Kurus. So he was a little bit partial towards Duryodhana, which seems strange because Duryodhana was, you know, really a rascal and didn't seem to have any good qualities, as we've seen, and was really pretty much responsible for the war of everything he did to the Pandavas. So why would Balaram be a little partial to Duryodhana? Well, go ahead. Because he taught him how to use the club. And as you know, if someone is your student, you tend to be a little bit, you know, partial to them. The teachers are usually the well-wisher of the students, sometimes even much later in their life. You know, there's some relationship there. So we could say that Balaram recused himself from the battle. You know this word recuse? Sometimes they say that judges, if they knew, say someone was in a case, and it happened to be someone they knew, the person coming into the courtroom was accused of something, it was his next-door neighbor, and was a friend of his. So he said, I'm going to recuse myself because I may have a conflict of interest, right? So Balaram had a conflict of interest in a sense. Of course, this is all a spiritual pastime, you know, but for the sake of the pastime, Balaram is exhibiting that he has this conflict. You know, he's very close with the Pandavas and Krishna, and he's also kind of close with Duryodhana. So he decided, I will not fight in the battle, and instead he went on pilgrimage. And then, of course, many things happened. Ramharshansutta was killed because he was disrespectful to Balaram, did not recognize him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so, but because he killed Ramharshansutta, who was put in place by the sages, and he was a Brahmin, more or less, you know, at least partially a Brahmin, he had to atone for that, or he felt he did. He thought he should set example, so he asked the sages, how should I atone for killing Ramharshansutta? So, two things. One was to continue going on pilgrimage to all the holy places. But before that, they said, we would like you to do something for us. And what was that? What do the sages need? What problem were they having? Did someone say? Go ahead. Balvala. What was Balvala doing? Harassing them, yes, or harassing them. Is it harass? Both are correct? Okay. I'm kind of a stickler for English. I hate to say things incorrectly, especially in a Bhagavatam course, a class that goes all over the world. At any rate, he was giving them a lot of problems. And he was, you know, ruining their sacrifices, throwing unmentionables, it says, terrible things, pus, blood, urine, whatever, all over the sacrificial arena. So as a favor to the sages, Balaram simply easily killed the demon Valvala. It took about two lines here. Seemed like it was quite simple for him. And what weapons did he use? Someone over here. Gotta wake him up. What weapons? A club and a plow. What were the Sanskrit words for those? Remember? Gotcha. Go ahead. The plow was what? Hala, right? And what was the name given for the club? Sometimes we think of gada, but this was a different word, name was used. Anyone remember? I had to write it down. I couldn't remember. Musala? Wasn't it? Musalena was the word, I think, Musala. Is that right? Musala. Musala is a name for Balaram's club. So with these two weapons, and of course, he's also used as a plow because he's actually sort of the symbol of, you know, agriculture and the bull. Just like, you know, Krishna's like known for, you know, Govinda, Gopal being associated with the cows. Balaram's also associated with the bulls and agriculture and plowing. So he has a plow. But he doesn't just use the plow, obviously, for plowing the ground. He also uses that as a weapon. And sometimes we see on the altar, Balaram, sometimes the Vajaris will put a plow and often clubs in Balaram's hand because he's very associated with those weapons. Okay, so we have this very interesting pastime that's going on, and after this, Balaram will continue to go on pilgrimage to many places, and then eventually, of course, he goes back to the battle of Kurukshetra. And so all that is going on. So we can see that Krishna and Balaram fulfill many purposes with one thing. So on the pretext, perhaps, of not going, not participating in the battle of Kurukshetra, he also benedicts the sages, he helps them out, he sets up Sutta Goswami as the speaker at Namisharanya. It's supposed to be a 1,000-year sacrifice, so the right person is in place. So many things happen. And this is what we see continually throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam in the 10th canto, that Krishna and Balaram are doing many, many things, many purposes are served simultaneously by one act. So we might ask, why is it so important that we study and we hear all of these different activities and pastimes of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So I wanted to talk a little bit, since we don't really have a lot of material in the purports here, you know, a little bit about the Srimad Bhagavatam and why we're sitting here every day, and you students at least once a week, in hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Srimad Bhagavatam, and particularly this 10th canto that we're reading, gives us the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. It tells us wonderful pastimes of Krishna are revealed to us, and also many practical applications of devotional service. We see many examples of devotees and how devotees act and how devotees perform devotional service. We hear their prayers, we see their relationship with Krishna. So it's very, very instructive to us. In the 7th chapter of the Adi Lila of Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya said that all the Vedic verses describe three subject matters. There's three categories of subjects that all of these all the verses in the Vedas describe. Does anyone know what they think? This is probably one for either adults or older students. What are the three topic matters? Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. So actually, almost everything can be classified into those three categories. Sambandha is our beginning relationship, the connection. Sambandha, we're connecting with Krishna through the philosophy. We're understanding our relationship with Krishna, understanding spiritual knowledge. So what's one scripture that comes right to mind that really gives us a lot of this basic knowledge, sambandha? Nectar devotion, somewhat. What else? What book? What book that you probably read very frequently? Yeah, and Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita, you know, it gives all the basic knowledge, right? Of, you know, Ishvara, Jiva, Prakriti, Kala, and Karma. In other words, all the basics of how things work in this material world and the spiritual world, and what the relationship of the living entity with Krishna is. This is sambandha. And actually, in Vrindavan, there's a deity, one of the six Goswami's deities, which is in charge of sambandha. And I think some sitting in the back can tell us that. Yes, yes. Madan Mohan, yes. Yes, the Madan Mohan deity is in charge of sambandha. Now, Abhideya is our activities in devotional service, practical application. How do we perform devotional service? And where might we see some of those instructions? What books? Yeah. Nectar devotion, excellent. That's nectar, especially the first few chapters, first 18 chapters, I think, specifically, give us a lot of that information, how we perform devotional service. The 64 items of devotional service are all there. Everything is there in Nectar Devotion. There's another one similar, also written by Rupa Goswami, that gives us some practical instruction, called Nectar of... Yes, Upadam... yes, Nectar of Instruction. And so those are good examples. And Prayojana is the perfection. Prayojana means pure, unalloyed devotional service. You know, where, in other words, it's the culmination. When one understands Krishna, one performs devotional service, then finally one comes to the realization and engages in his relationship of bhakti. And where might we see some of that? Where would we see this prayojana, the highest perfection? What books would we probably see that? That? Explain. Chaitanya Charitamrita, yes, the conversation of the Ramananda Roy? Yeah, Chaitanya Charitamrita, absolutely. Where and what we might be reading right now? Right? The 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam gives us so much of the intimate relationship of Krishna and his devotees in Vrindavan. We have the Rasa dance, we have the Damodar Leela with Mother Yashoda. This is all part of that, you know, this is the devotees fully realized in their relationship with God. So the Srimad Bhagavatam, especially this 10th canto, gives us all. It gives us spiritual knowledge, it gives us lessons in devotional service, and different pastimes. So sometimes it seems like there's a lot of detail, a lot of information. Sometimes we read the Srimad Bhagavatam and you have whole chapters about creation. Sometimes you get in the 8th and 9th chapters, you get whole chapters of genealogy. You know, so many different things. So we might wonder, why is it that we need to hear all of this? Well, first of all, There's a strong effect of just hearing the spiritual sound as given by pure devotees and from this pure spiritual literature of the Bhagavatam. It's very purifying and eternally beneficial to the living entity just to hear the Bhagavatam. It also, of course, gives us transcendental knowledge. It helps us to understand our spiritual nature. And we all have a need for knowledge. An intelligent human being wants to know, what is the purpose of life? Who am I? Right? This is what Sanatana Goswami in Madhyalila, was the 19th, 20th chapter. First thing he asks, when Sanatana Goswami approaches Lord Chaitanya, he says, people think I'm a learned man, an intelligent person, but I don't even know who I am. Explain to me, what is my, you know, relationship, you know, with Krishna? Who is the jiva? So we all need to know this. Intelligent people want to understand their spiritual nature. We also need this knowledge to be able to preach to others. If we are ignorant, how can we convince anyone else of Krishna consciousness? You know, we say, take up this chain, Hare Krishna. Well, why? Well, because, yeah, but people suddenly want to know what is the philosophy. And so to the degree that we're able to, we want to repeat this knowledge of Srimad Bhagavatam given to us by Srila Prabhupada. And of course, we also understand, as we hear spiritual knowledge, that we are eternal spirit souls. We are different from the body, and we have a relationship with Krishna. And even just through hearing from the Bhagavatam, that relationship with Krishna develops, right? The more we hear about that relationship and we understand devotional service, that grows. It's also described that the attraction to the material world lessens or decreases as we become more and more attached to Krishna and developing that relationship. Srimad Bhagavatam 127 says, by rendering devotional service unto the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. So as our devotional service is increasing, we automatically become less attached to the material world and spiritual knowledge is developing. So the mind and intelligence need to be convinced. They can be our best friend or they can be our worst enemy. So the mind is controlled by knowledge. Right? As spiritual knowledge is there, it tends to replace or supplant so many other things that are going on in the mind. And we know the mind is very active and can lead us in all sorts of strange directions. So the best way to control the mind is through the mind's being absorbed in bhakti and Krishna consciousness and devotional service. We might say the highest purpose of the Bhagavatam and hearing the Bhagavatam is to develop our attraction to Krishna and Balaram. We hear these activities, we hear these pastimes, and we become attracted, we become attached. Even in our very early days, I remember way back in the 70s, and you know, we'd read Krishna book at night and just hear the pastimes of Krishna. And we all became very attracted to Krishna. We didn't know a lot about Krishna, but by hearing Krishna's pastimes, that attraction develops within the heart. We know when, now the kids are gone, I was going to ask more questions, so I'll skip those. When we... Srila Vyasadeva compiled all of the Vedas. He wrote the four Vedas. He put them all down in written form. He added the Mahabharata, the Puranas, the Upanishads, everything. But he still wasn't satisfied. He was feeling despondent. You all know the story. And of course, his spiritual master was, I'll have to ask you since kids are done, Narada Muni. And Narada Muni told him, the reason that you're not satisfied is because you have written all of this wonderful Vedic knowledge, but you haven't specifically just glorified Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he compiled Srimad Bhagavatam, because Srimad Bhagavatam is the Amala Purana, the spotless, pure Purana, which is meant only to glorify Krishna. There's no trace of material modes of nature in the Bhagavatam. Everything is connected with Krishna. So we're hearing pastimes of Balaram, pastimes of Krishna, you know, everything, devotees of Krishna. Everything is connected with Krishna. Nothing is separate. There's no karmakanda. There's not, here's how you can do. And even when they describe ritualistic processes, which are in some parts of the Bhagavatam, they're all aimed at pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Srimad Bhagavatam is the topmost authority for the Vaishnavas. It's the measure of all other literature. Everything is in relationship with Krishna, and it's used as proof throughout all the books. If you read the Goswami's books or Nectar of Devotion, they constantly quote the Srimad Bhagavatam because the Srimad Bhagavatam is the authority. I was reading one of a purport on one of the verses I was studying by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. In his Srimad Bhagavatam purport, he quotes four other verses from the purport to substantiate what he's saying. So in other words, it's almost self-referential. In other words, the Bhagavatam is the proof of the Bhagavatam because it's absolute, because it's so pure that you simply quote other verses of the Bhagavatam and say, yes, this confirms it, which would seem a little odd logically, but because it's beyond logic, it's completely pure. In other words, you know, you want to understand Krishna? Well, here's, you know, take it from Krishna. So we hear the Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is our standard. It's the standard of all. And of course, Jiva Goswami in the Sandarbhas writes about this, isn't it? The first Sandarbha very extensively describes why Srimad Bhagavatam is the highest literature and why it is the standard and why we use it. It's like the gold standard, they say. We use it as our everything to judge everything else against. So the benefit of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam for the living entity is that we become purified through that hearing, and our Krishna consciousness becomes revived. And the Bhagavatam, of course, in the second chapter of the first canto, describes this whole process of purification that comes about through hearing. 1:2:17 says, Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, who is the Paramatma in everyone's heart, and the benefactor of the truthful devotee, cleanses desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee, who has developed the urge to hear his messages, which are in themselves virtuous when properly heard and chanted. So cleansing the desire of material enjoyment from the heart. That is the benefit of one who hears these messages of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So it's only the process of pure devotional service, not that we are pure, but we're becoming pure through the process of devotional service. It's only that process that completely purifies the heart and cleanses all the anarthas, because behind our sinful activities or the reactions to sinful activities are material desires. If the heart is not cleansed, even if whatever one does to try to make up for one's bad activities, it will not work, as long as the desire is still there. And just knowledge alone is not sufficient without the purifying power of bhakti. Now, of course, there's a very nice explanation in the sixth canto, especially in the second chapter, where the Vishnu Dutas are explaining to the Yama Dutas the philosophy and how chanting and process of devotional service is purifying. In 6:2:17, says, although one may neutralize the reactions of sinful life through austerity, charity, vows, and other such methods, these pious activities cannot uproot the material desires of one's heart. However, if one serves the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead, he's immediately free from all such contaminations. So devotional service is what is going to dissolve all those contaminations from the heart. Now, we have material desire within the heart, so there's actually one other step. What is the source, the root source of those material desires? Janmashtami. Ignorance? Absolutely. You get gold star. Avidya, ignorance. It's described that is the root cause. A couple verses later, Bhagavatam 1:2:21 says, thus the knot in the heart is pierced, and all misgivings are cut to pieces. The chain of fruit of action is terminated when one sees the self as master. So this word, Hrida Granthi, in this verse is the knot in the heart. Now, interesting, Srila Prabhupada, in the purport, describes that Hrida Granthi is ahankar, false ego. And Jiva Goswami describes that knot is avidya, ignorance. So it's really the same thing. They're saying the same thing, aren't they? And false ego, ahankara, means ignorance of one's real self, falsely identifying oneself with matter, identifying with the material energy, the material senses and mind. And that's ignorance. That is what avidya is. Avidya means ignorance of one's real constitutional position. So that's the knot in the heart, that we have this ahankara, this connection, this, you know, with material energy, and we're ignorant of our real position. And so the process of Krishna consciousness breaks this knot in the heart. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary in this verse, says that all karmas are destroyed and also all doubts. He also mentions that, you know, destroying this knot in the heart also destroys any doubts that are there within the living entity. So, the purpose of this Krishna conscious movement, this process of bhakti yoga that Srila Prabhupada has given us, is to change the heart, to change the consciousness. Not to simply do some activity, but to actually, it involves us in deep fundamental change on the spiritual level. This change of heart is a very, very, very strong thing. It's a very powerful thing. And it's really, in one sense, sometimes people ask, well, how is Krishna consciousness different than other religions? And we say, well, there's some similarities, and, you know, other religions talk about love of God, and, you know, certainly that's there. But what is it about bhakti yoga that's so different? And I would say this is what it is. It's actually purifying the heart. It's not simply just, oh, I have some knowledge of God, or God is this, or God is love, or some platitude. It's actually purifying the heart so that we are reconnecting our relationship with Krishna. So, this change of heart, we even have a chapter in the Bhagavatam called the change of heart. Right? Second canto, third chapter, and then we have the famous change of heart verse, verse 24. Certainly that heart is steel framed, which in spite of one's chanting the holy name of the Lord with concentration, does not change when ecstasy takes place, tears fill the eyes, and hairs stand on end. Now, it's kind of an interesting verse because it's saying all this ecstatic symptoms are happening, but the one may not change the heart. So Prabhupada explains that in the purport, that it can't be a superficial show, but it must be a real change of heart. In other words, sometimes it's, you know, in other words, that is what's really important. Not so much that there's a show of ecstatic symptoms, but that the heart is changing. And if the heart does not change, even through the process of Krishna consciousness and devotional service, hearing and chanting, it is due only to give it a try. Offenses. Yes. It is due to offenses. So sometimes our nama-parad can prevent us from experiencing the ecstasy of Krishna consciousness even if we're performing it. So that's very important. But how does that become purified? Simply through the process of Krishna consciousness. Of course, if we offended a Vaishnava, then we must go and get forgiveness from that Vaishnava. And there are some specific recommendations for that. But generally, the anartas and offenses that are there in the heart, for the most part, become purified simply by continued chanting of the holy name. So, through that chanting and hearing process, the transformation comes about. The heart becomes purified, and we reconnect our relationship with Krishna. So the primary instruction of Srila Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya and all of our acharyas is to purify our heart by hearing the Vedic literature, the Srimad Bhagavatam, and chanting the names of God. So the holy name has such power. Going back to our second chapter of the sixth canto, with our story of the Vishnu Dutas, I didn't write it down, but in the 19th verse, the Vishnu Dutas talk about how the holy name, someone may know this verse, I don't know, but basically the idea of it, they're saying that just as a powerful medicine may act without the patient's knowledge. We all know that, right? Somebody could be very sick, they're unconscious, but they're given some medicine and it works on them. They have no knowledge of it. So in the same way, if that can happen, if without your knowledge a medicine can help cure your material disease, why can't the holy name cure the spiritual disease with or without our knowledge? So that's what the Vishuddhas were saying. This end example, of course, was Jamil. Even if he didn't know what he was saying, even if he thought Narayan, he was just calling out for his son, it still had that same effect. It had the purifying effect. As if he were fully conscious and fully understanding his relationship with Narayan. But the holy name had that power that it saved him from the Yamadutas. And of course, the Vishuddhas restored his life and he took up pure Krishna consciousness. So then eventually he was able to go back to Godhead. So chanting of the holy name is very powerful. I'll end with a nice a little commentary on Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.2.2.30. This is Vishnu Chakravarti Thakura's commentary. He says, among the angas of angas means arms or limbs, right? Amongst the angas of bhakti, which is ascertained as king? Chanting the name of the Lord is the principal method. Among all angas, the chief ones are hearing, chanting, remembering, right? Shravanam, kirtanam, smaranam, that's obvious. Amongst these three, chanting is the chief. And among the different types of chanting, chanting the name of the Lord is supreme. So, Lord Chaitanya, our acharyas, Srila Prabhupada, all confirm that the process of hearing and chanting will purify the heart and bring us to the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna. Jai. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. We've probably got a couple minutes here if there's any discussion. I'm going to look over the ladies' side first. Sometimes people have commented that sometimes we look on this side all the time. Okay, I'll give you a minute while Jatari's got his question. Go ahead, Jatari.
It was Sunday Feast lecture. There was a discussion about the mirror of the mind.
Hmm.
My thought was, how is the mind a mirror?
How is the mind a mirror? Because it reflects all the sensory information. The mind, in other words, the purpose of the mind is that all the sensory information goes to the mind. The mind evaluates, accepts, rejects, and then of course the intelligence above the mind helps the mind and the senses to achieve their objectives. So the mind is reflecting everything that's out there. I mean, that's best I can explain it. I mean, it's not, maybe somebody has a better explanation. And then, of course, there's also the analogy, isn't it, that there's the dust covers the mirror of the mind, so that we're not being a pure reflection of reality, which is spiritual life, our spiritual understanding. So with the dust, clouding that mirror, it's reflected imperfectly, which makes us think that we are this body and that we are here to enjoy the material world. That was my best shot at it.
No, that was good.
Okay. Anything else? Okay. Last shot for the women. Okay. Go ahead. Who's next?
Oh, it's a very nice question. Just one thing. It was bothering me a long time back also that the 6 to 16 that you read, Ajamil, hearing the dialogue between Vishnu Rupa and Jamadutas. So when I read Srila Prabhupada says, voluntarily giving up tendency from cursing is austerity.
The tendency to what?
Cursing. To curse others.
Cursing. Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
That's austerity, Prabhupada considers.
Okay.
To get up early morning for Mangal Arati is austerity.
Uh-huh.
To chant 16 rounds is austerity. So, our idea of austerity and bow, like this Kartik Vrata,
yeah,
all these things. So in that sloka that you read, that it appears like when we perform devotional service, we are doing all this anyway. The bow, we are four egoistic principle, chanting 16 rounds, we are doing austerity. We are, but I think what I probably understanding that, that separately from bhakti, if we do, then it is bad. It will not purify the heart ultimately.
Yeah.
But bhakti already has, those are also part of bhakti, even though those appears like austerity, like coming to the temple every day.
Yeah.
It seems like austerity, but that's already bhakti, so it is not really referred as austerity.
Yeah, what the Vishuddhas are talking about, they're talking about pious activities. They mention austerity, charity, vows. Austerity, charity, and vows could have nothing to do with devotional service. I could be very austere for whatever reasons. Hiranyakasipu performed great austerities. I could perform charity, give to all kinds of charities. I could do so many things, but if they're not connected with Krishna consciousness or for the purpose of satisfying Krishna, then they're not going to uproot the material desires in the heart. Yeah. And then immediately, of course, in that same verse, in the last part, Arini says, if one serves the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead, he's free from contamination. So I think the contrast here is between material pious activities and devotional activities.
Another point was like that when we are performing devotional service, like I'm hearing you speaking on Bhagavatam. I am gathering knowledge. I am accumulating knowledge in my heart. I am contemplating as I am hearing you. Mm-hmm. So the knowledge will not purify the heart in that sense that, but in devotional service, that knowledge appearing, it is also part of devotion.
Yeah.
It is not knowledge that we think knowledge will not purify the heart.
Yeah. That's a good point. We sometimes use that in different ways, don't we? Because if you think of, you know, knowledge in the sense of jnana is not so much valued, but understanding spiritual knowledge from the Srimad Bhagavatam is very much appreciated. In fact, that's shravanam, and it's, you know, that's our process of bhakti. So yeah, it's again, everything in relationship with bhakti is beneficial to the living entity, but similar, even activities that seem similar, if they're not directly connected with pure devotional service, will not have so much effect. Thank you, that's a good point. Anything else? Okay. Wait for the microphone.
Thank you. In that regard, is that influence of a person's consciousness, how they perform? I mean, that also factors in, so it becomes super, super complicated how that actually works.
Okay, yeah. You're saying then it's not necessarily automatic, it's also a matter of consciousness in terms of what? The process of bhakti?
Reading, chanting, remembering.
Yeah, there's two aspects of it. One, there is the automatic sense. You know, we even have this, you know, we have this concept of agata sukriti, that there can be unknown benefit. In other words, if you give somebody a book and they have the book in their hand, they're benefiting, even if they don't read it or if they even open it up. If they have it on their bookshelf, Prabhupada says, like having a deity in your house. And of course, people simply hear the holy name, like when you go out on Harinam, you know, people benefit from it. But your point is also very well taken, that the more consciously and actively we apply the process, obviously there's going to be so much more benefit. In other words, if we're hearing Srimad Bhagavatam with devotion or, you know, with faith, and we're chanting the holy name, trying to really hear the holy name and understand how Krishna's name is non-different than him, and I am in relationship with Krishna as I chant Krishna's name, yes, there's going to be very, very, you know, greater benefit and faster advancement. Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much. All glories to your Prabhupada.